Welcome to the Healthy Podcast, presented by Melrose Wakefield Hospital. My name is Rob Bragna, and I am pleased to welcome today's guests, Dr. Salvatore Nardello and Dr. Abhishek Chatterjee, oncoplastic breast surgeons. Thank you both for being here, and welcome to the Healthy Podcast.
Thank you, Rob. Certainly a pleasure to be here today.
A few years ago, you were both guests on this podcast, and we had a great discussion about what was then the latest in updates and breakthroughs in breast cancer surgery. A big part of that discussion focused on the emergence of oncoplastic breast surgery. Now, at the time, you were both among just a handful of surgeons across the country trained in oncoplastic surgery, and things have really taken off from there. And I'm wondering if you could give us a refresher, if we could sort of step back, provide some background on what oncoplastic breast surgery is, what it entails, who it's for, et cetera.
Absolutely. It's certainly a pleasure to be here with my accomplice in arms, if you will, in this oncoplastic surgery journey. And that's Dr. Nardello, who's an excellent oncoplastic surgeon. But in essence, oncoplastic surgery is the newest and, if you will, the third surgical option that patients have when considering breast cancer surgical choices, the first being a lumpectomy, where you take a lump out of a breast which has the cancer and you sew the skin in, the most extreme being a mastectomy with or without reconstruction. Without reconstruction, patients choose to go flat, and there's an aesthetic flat closure that's associated with that, in addition to, if they choose to have reconstruction, having implant or having their own tissue to reconstruct, but that often requires multiple operations. Oncoplastic surgery is something in between. It allows a patient to undergo a very large partial mastectomy, also known as a lumpectomy. So you take more tissue out, and you use the breast's own remaining tissue to fill in the very large void. And so it is a form of breast conservation surgery, which is more aggressive than a simple lumpectomy, because it allows the woman to not only have larger cancers taken out without undergoing a mastectomy and removing all her breast tissue, but allows her to preserve her own breasts and also have reconstruction at the same time using her own tissue. I think it's typically one operation that requires approximately 3 hours of surgical time, and patients go home the same day. And the American Society of Breast Surgeons have defined it as breast conservation surgery, as has the Society of Surgical Oncology, which are the two largest surgical oncology groups. They've essentially blessed it as A, safe, B, as an effective choice that provides value to a patient, not only from an oncological standpoint where you take out the cancer, but also from a reconstructive standpoint where women feel good about how they look because of the types of patterns that we use to reconstruct the breast. Lastly, and this is new from the last time Dr. Nardello and I spoke, but the NCCN guidelines, which are some of the most conservative guidelines out there with regards to moving forward and recommending treatments, have recently approved oncoplastic surgery as a breast cancer surgical choice, based on a massive track record of safety and, frankly, patient-reported outcome measures that have favored oncoplastic surgery, especially when you start to compare it to other choices in certain circumstances. Sam, do you have anything to add?
Thank you for having me today. It really is a blessing and a privilege to be able to be here with Dr. Chatterjee and working with some of the other team members we have at Tufts Medicine. I mean, we have put together such a remarkable group that allows us to give all our patients the best outcomes possible as they go through this very difficult journey. So, you know, whenever somebody's faced with such a life-changing diagnosis such as breast cancer, it's one of the hardest things that anybody will go through. And for them to have options, I think really helps them along this difficult path. And oncoplastic surgery allows, as Dr. Chatterjee said, you know, a combination of marrying the oncologic perspective, which is cancer resection, which is what most people are most concerned about, and adding in the plastic reconstructive option. So it used to be that all people wanted to do was live, and they really didn't care about the way they looked, and they just said, well, just get out the cancer. And for them to have access and options to, look, you can have the cancer resection safely, but you can also have breast reconstruction at the same time so that when you wake up from surgery, you actually feel comfortable. You feel good about the way you look. So our data, we've published this, it's not only safe, but it actually leads to something we really want to talk about, which is financial toxicity and the added cost with multiple operations that women may have to go through with reconstruction, or if you do that simple lumpectomy, you know, we're really focusing on getting all of the cancer out the first time. And nationally, the data is that 20 to 40% of the time, you can have positive margins, meaning the cancer comes right up to the edge of where the surgeon cut, and that may result in multiple other operations, which cause a tremendous amount of anxiety, as well as the costs of time out of work, the cost of hospitalizations, et cetera. So by doing the oncoplastic surgery, not only do we improve cosmetic outcomes, appearance, social satisfaction, and well-being, but we can also reduce the chances of positive margins, meaning we can take out larger segments of tissue, reconstruct the breast at the same time, and reduce that positive margin rate. When we published this, our positive margin rate went from, you know, 20 to 30 down to 9.2%, which is, it's not perfect, but it's much better when you compare it to the national data.
Yeah, and I would even say the local regional, you know, what the hospitals, other hospitals in the system have published, the positive margin rates are at least 20% when they do breast conservation. But with this oncoplastic technique, which is the newest form of breast conservation surgery, not only, as you mentioned, do we improve the reconstructed breast form that patients appreciate years after, but we really do improve short-term surgical oncologic outcomes because our positive margin rate is some of the best out there, which is at about 9% to 10%. And we've published multiple papers demonstrating that outcome, which is immensely important because it not only decreases the anxiety, but the more operations you do, the greater the possibility of potentially delaying adjuvant therapy. And what is that? It is subsequent treatment to treat cancer. So what does that involve? Radiation, medicines. So if you have a complication or you need to have multiple operations, sometimes it delays patients from moving forward on that cancer journey. And you don't want that because if there's a delay, then that can lead to worse cancer outcomes, recurrences of cancer, mortality, things that you really want to avoid. So the less operations you have up front by successfully removing all the cancer means less delays. And if oncoplastic surgery provides those less delays because the positive margin rates are a lot less and you don't need that second operation, then patients can be done with their journey. They can move on to subsequent therapy and not be delayed in those. So I think there's so many advantages. And then, you know, since we last spoke a few years ago, we started to look at patient-reported outcome measures, which are what cancer patients report on their cancer journey with regards to their surgical care. So the most common form of that is something called BreastQ, which is a validated patient-reported outcome measure. And so when we studied this, we looked at all cancers that in the literature with regards to lumpectomies, mastectomies with and without reconstruction, and then oncoplastic surgery. And this hadn't been looked at a large-scale fashion. So we did what we called a literature review and a meta-analysis, and which is kind of like a gold standard in looking at all the literature out there published on this data. And we looked, and this had thousands of patients involved. And what we saw we found that all three options are good options for the right patient. But when oncoplastic surgery is a choice, patients found with regards to sexual well-being, psychosocial well-being, satisfaction with their own breasts, and overall satisfaction, that compared to before having a cancer surgery, that they really appreciated their breast form and those four criteria more so than any of the other two choices. And that's actually fascinating. It makes sense, especially if you have one operation using your own tissue with a breast reduction or a breast lift design. Patients perceive that they look at least the same, if not slightly better than before, and that's what the data showed. While in the other two choices, in lumpectomy and mastectomy, oftentimes that was not the case. They were still overall satisfied, but they were most satisfied with the oncoplastics choice when it was appropriate.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it comes back to choice and knowing that patients have the choice of this, and not all organizations offer this. And that's why I think we love working for Tufts Medicine, is because they really do value, and it's been an honor and a privilege working with such an organization that values patient outcomes and their experience. So Tufts Medicine has given us the ability to offer this. They've invested in cutting-edge new technology. They've been active with involvement in clinical trials. They give us access to state-of-the-art treatments because our system administration really believes in that.
Yeah.
And if I have a family member diagnosed with cancer, I want them to be treated here. I want them to be treated by my own colleagues because I want them to have access to this, because I know it's a very safe option, but allows somebody to go to sleep during anesthesia with cancer and to wake up without cancer, cancer-free, looking potentially better than they did beforehand. Now, we can't make you look as good as God has, obviously, you know, but to give patients the ability to have reconstruction all at the same time using your own tissue by removing large segments of tissue and countering it out with doing a symmetry reduction on the other side, or also if somebody just wants surgery on one side, I do want to get into that, Dr. Chowdhury, in terms of what has changed since last time.
Yeah.
And you know, if somebody says, look, I have smaller breasts, I read about oncoplastic surgery, it seems like it's always related to reductions, but in smaller breasts, I have a larger tumor. I saw somebody, they said, geez, because of the size of your tumor, you really need a mastectomy. Would you recommend any other option for this patient?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. We always strive to improve, right? As surgeons, especially in the Tufts Medicine system, you know, just because we are leading in oncoplastic surgery in the city and in the Northeast, I would agree. I mean, I would say we would certainly are leaders in that and teachers in that. It doesn't mean we sit and do nothing else to improve. So I think one of the things we've improved upon is taken oncoplastic surgery to the next level by expanding choices for the patient. So if you look at the classification system of oncoplastic surgery according to the American Society of Breast Surgeons, there's volume displacement, which in essence is a large lumpectomy followed by a breast reduction or a breast lift technique, and you do a, on the other side, you do a symmetry breast lift or a reduction to match the breasts up so women can feel functionally well in a bra, and when they look at themselves in the mirror a year or years after, they feel really good. And so, and I always say, if you go, our job is successful if first the cancer is taken out, but years after, if you're walking on a beach in swimwear and people see you, they don't ask the question, oh, I wonder if she's a breast cancer survivor. They ask the question, oh, I wonder if she's had plastic surgery. And it shouldn't be obvious, but it should be subtle. But the question shouldn't be, oh, she's a breast cancer survivor, even though the patient knows she is. But other people see her as a person who isn't that, a person who's living and functioning just like anyone without breast cancer. And the question is, did she have plastic surgery? And that would be nice. And she's alive, free of cancer. So that's the goal. But that's volume displacement oncoplastics. I think what we really expanded upon through training and by just looking at the literature is our techniques of volume replacement oncoplastics, which uses local tissue outside the breast, but right next to it. We call that local regional flap advancement. And so this volume replacement technique, which is another choice in the classification of oncoplastic surgery, allows us to basically use the tissue right next to the breast and bring it into the defects that typically occur with breast cancer resection, aggressive breast cancer resection, without the need of massive options of surgical flaps that typically would occur after mastectomies. Again, this is all about breast conservation. So I think, you know, we've actually expanded our abilities in offering those choices. And so now when women come in with smaller breasts but larger cancers, we can remove up to 50% of the breast but take the adjacent tissue and fill that area in with their own tissue in one operation and not even have to touch the other breast. So oftentimes, you know, we were limited. If the woman didn't want anything done to the other side because you were giving them a breast lift, oncoplastics wasn't an option. But we asked ourselves, can we do better? And with this volume replacement technique, we have the option of just operating on one side. That's advantageous in so many ways. And a woman who doesn't need a lift, who has smaller breasts, they are still allowed the option of breast conservation when in many choices with a larger cancer, we'd have to remove her breast. and that allows her to get back to work faster, all the advantages of oncoplastic surgery in the past. And oftentimes, let's be honest, women like the way they look. They don't need us to adjust both breasts. And so it gives them that choice to say, you know what, please don't take my breasts off. Use this other choice. Use my own tissue. I don't want an implant. Let's do volume replacement. And now at Tufts Medicine, through the advancements that we've created in educating ourselves and in educating our staff, and also by teaching other surgeons in the country, we've afforded the option of volume replacement oncoplastics. It's frankly quite rare to do a mastectomy in a non-genetics positive patient who comes in with breast cancer. Because at the end of the day, women like to not have their own single breast, or God forbid, both breasts removed, and have multiple operations down the line when they can preserve their breasts and have one operation with their own tissue.
And we recently published this. It was a study we were so interested in looking at, and that's the question we get all the time is it safe? You know, if I do a mastectomy or more, because that's the first thing people think of is I want to live, I want to do everything I can, just remove both my breasts, not understanding the biology of this and that doing more surgery doesn't mean you're going to live longer. Sometimes doing less surgery can be more advantageous. So doing more is not something that translates into better outcomes.
And I'd flip it on you. Now, right. More and more data is coming out that doing less surgery sometimes will allow you to live longer.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did with that large meta-analysis that we published in the fall, was looking at breast conservation versus mastectomy. Are there any changes in survival? And the answer is the trend favors partial mastectomy. And the reason for that is probably adjuvant systemic therapy, radiation, and medical treatments are getting better. But also maybe the immune effects of smaller operations. We're not exactly sure, but the data is the data, and it's exciting for patients to know that they have that option and that choice.
Yeah, I want to really delve a little bit more deeply on that, because that's actually a little controversial. So what Dr. Nardella, what Sam was saying was, in the Annals of Surgical Oncology, based on multiple huge studies that have been done in the United States, in Europe, in Asia, really multi-continental studies independently done, there was a trend that showed that if a woman was going to have her breast removed, which is a mastectomy, versus having breast conservation surgery, historically we were taught that there was no difference in survival, but with these newer database studies on huge populations, study after study was showing that there was survival advantage, which was completely counterintuitive when a woman underwent less surgery. In other words, they underwent breast conservation surgery versus mastectomy. Now, it would make more sense that if you removed a woman's breast, that chances are they may survive longer. But historically, we were taught that there was no difference. Why? Because radiation benefited the breast conservation patients. Because every patient who's going to get breast conservation gets radiation. That is not true with mastectomies most of the time. So with newer forms of radiation therapy, with better surgical techniques such as oncoplastics and margin control, and with better medications, these newer studies have actually shown that breast conservation, lesser surgery, was better for survival compared to removing a woman's breast completely with a mastectomy. And as Dr. Nardello says, we're not sure why that's the case. But our studies that combined all those previous studies using a meta-analysis technique and including 1.5 million patients throughout the world showed that there was a significant survival difference. And this is actually being reproduced by the Europeans who did a similar meta-analysis at the same time and thankfully showed the same results that kind of proved our study to be true. Still controversial, but when a woman comes in and says, you know, survival is of importance to me, which pretty much every woman with breast cancer, you know, favors. Now we have data showing that maybe oncoplastic surgery, which is a form of breast conservation, should be at least in the informed decision when creating a shared decision-making model with a patient and coming up with a plan. You can't ignore it anymore. In fact, I would say it's a standard that should be part of the discussion. And it boggles my mind how sometimes you go within the same city to huge institutions and the word oncoplastic surgery doesn't even come about. What do you think about that?
I think that you're one of the world leaders in it, and that gives us the ability to give this important part of surgery to as access for them. It's a challenging operation. It takes a team. It takes a multidisciplinary approach. It takes continued knowledge in it, and I think we push each other, right? When we're in there, we're pushing each other's boundaries to do better for our patients because, quite frankly, they deserve it. And if you don't have that culture in your organization where you want to be better, you want to offer patients more like they were on your own family member, then I don't know if you'll ever get to that. So, you know, that's why I value the relationship I have with the team we work with, is because we are a true multidisciplinary team involving every aspect of care: medical oncology, radiation oncology, nutrition, social work, nursing, clinical trials, genetics, et cetera, to help somebody get through this tough diagnosis to the top. So I said to my patients, you know, I said, look, we're going to become family, you know, and I want you to be part of the decisions that you're making, and I want to offer you all the options possible, knowing that I'm going to be seeing you for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road. And we need to be able to work together, and because we're going to have a long relationship together. So I, you know, the take home I think is when somebody's diagnosed with cancer, they come in, they say, just do whatever you have to do, right? They say, just take it out. I just want to be cancer free. I have a daughter's wedding I have to get to. I just need to get it to that point. And I think it's time for us to say, all right, you're going to be well taken care of. We have a whole team taking care of you. Here are the options, and oncoplastic surgery is such a great option for them, because people will often say, I just want to be cancer-free. I don't care what I look like. But it's not until 5 years later, 10 years later, when they're walking down the aisle for their daughter's wedding, where they say, you know, I feel good about the way I look. I don't feel permanently disfigured. I don't feel deformed after that life-saving cancer operation, because just because you have cancer doesn't mean you have to look bad.
Yeah, and also, I totally agree with everything you said, but also the cancer outcomes, especially compared to a standard lumpectomy by itself, I would say the short-term cancer outcomes are better with oncoplastics.
Because of the margins.
Because of the margins.
Yeah.
And so that, I totally agree with that. And I want to underscore, it is truly a team. And I think, you know, one of the reasons we've adopted oncoplastics so well is because it begins from the very beginning, which is tumor board. Every pathology slide that occurs after a woman has biopsy, unfortunately after they've seen a mammogram abnormality, is reviewed by the entire team, which includes the surgeons, the oncoplastic surgeons, the pathologists, the radiologists, the social workers. But the word oncoplastics begins from that point on. Is this person, based on their mammogram and their breast size and their cancer size, a candidate for oncoplastic surgery in addition to a lumpectomy or even a mastectomy? What do you think? And then you have multiple people who understand oncoplastic surgery, discuss it. And then that is brought back to the patient, who then comes as a follow-up to see us. And the discussion continues as what is best for them, but at least all options are discussed. And, you know, I getting back to why is this not offered more, and, you know, to your credit, since I know you're an educator in multiple courses, we've been doing, as teachers through the American Society of Breast Surgeons, and through teachers through multiple other societies in breast cancer and in plastic surgery, we've been trying to teach, you know, this oncoplastics option to the national scene of other surgeons practicing. And I do believe, you know, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, we are the only ones trying, because there are other doctors in the country who are trying. I know people at Emory doing this. I know people at MD Anderson doing this. Sloan Kettering has just, I think, started to delve into this. I know people at University of Southern California doing this. So major institutions are doing this. I mean, the Europeans are already ahead of the game in this. The Canadians are trying to catch up. And the South Americans, believe it or not, are doing quite well as well. But I think in the Northeast, it's still something that's slower than the rest of the nation, which is really, really counterintuitive if you think of Boston, the science central of how we see ourselves in the world. But that's okay. I think, you know, the last time when we talked about 6 years ago, none of the other institutions even had the word oncoplastic surgery on their website. Now, at least one or two of them have, but I you know, sometimes when patients go to different places, the degree of oncoplastic surgical options, because we talked about volume displacement and volume replacement, are still somewhat limited. And I think you and I have some more work to do in educating other surgeons, not only nationally, but also locally in saying, okay, listen, you know, we appreciate you guys adopting this, but let's go further. There are other options as well. And I think maybe 8 years after when we sit down together, maybe they've caught up at that point, but we still have some work to do.
And I think that's what will define our success together.
Yeah.
Is that everybody is adopting this and everybody is given this choice to their patients, because I think that's why we teach these courses. We want everybody to have access to these great techniques. It helps us become better surgeons. It helps us become better doctors. It helps to create better teams, creates better outcomes, and it creates more comfort for our patients.
You know, I think one of the things, in addition to expanding our techniques and choices as far as types of operations within oncoplastic surgery, that's certainly something we've improved upon since the last 6 years, and we offer that at Tufts Medicine. The other thing that I've fundamentally looked at is, and we've looked at, is the financial toxicity of breast cancer care, especially within surgery, because we are surgeons, that patients have, you know.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. So, you know, it's something that's really a hot topic recently, because we get that healthcare is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's costly for patients. And when they're diagnosed with a horrific disease, the first thing that comes to mind is, how am I going to afford it?
Exactly. The number one reason why people become bankrupt in the United States is because of healthcare bills. That's atrocious if you think about it, especially for something like breast cancer, which no one ever deserves, ever.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen this in your practice. I've seen it in mine. But sometimes people are making decisions on their care based on cost, right? So they're deciding not to get certain treatments just because it's expensive.
Or preventative care. Yeah.
And it might be as much as, look, I can't get radiation because I can't get to the radiation oncology office that many times. I don't have transportation, et cetera. So can you do me a favor, Dr. Chowdhury, define financial toxicity for our listeners?
Yeah, so financial toxicity is the financial burden that a patient incurs during their healthcare journey for a certain disease state. So in breast cancer, for example, a woman comes in, yes, they have a screening mammogram, but from the point of seeing something in the screening mammogram that's questionable, they have to come back, have additional imaging, possibly have a biopsy. The biopsy then possibly leads to cancer. The cancer then leads to a surgery that then may lead to medical treatment that might include chemotherapy. It then moves on to radiation therapy, and then at the very end, it could lead to hormonal therapy, depending on the type of cancer that they have. But I say this journey because it involves multiple steps, and you and I always counsel patients that this treatment of breast cancer from point A to point Z is a marathon, not a sprint. It takes a year, but within that year, there are multiple things being done. Each of those things add a cost to the patient. And it not only involves the deductible and maybe the sum that the insurance might cover, but it also involves time off work for the number of operations that they need or the number of medical visits that they need. And each day, each moment that they need a time off work, a recovery from surgery, adds to their cost because they can't work. Remember, these women are the foundations of their family who were diagnosed with breast cancer. They not only provide support to everybody else in the family, as the mother, as the sister, as the aunt, as the wife, but they also work. And oftentimes in a household that has the man and the woman working, that's 50% of revenue. And that is devastating. And so that's how a family goes under. And so not only is there a guilt in having the diagnosis of breast cancer and having to ask others for help, but there's that guilt of now not being able to earn and get back to the workforce. Yes. And that's the direct financial toxicity to the family and to the patient, which actually is the most important. You can argue financial toxicity is a society, but really, you and I care about the patient here, which is the most important thing in our mind, in getting them healthy and surviving this, but also not getting destroyed financially from this.
So how do you think oncoplastic surgery then can influence financial toxicity?
I think, it's fortuitous that when we were talking about having one operation and being done and going home the same day and recovering instead of over a few weeks rather than a few months, getting back to the workforce, having one operation, not multiple operations, with which then requires additional recovery each time. All those things favor breast conservation over something like a mastectomy with reconstruction. If you have oncoplastic surgery or breast conservation, you typically have one operation 90% of the time because you don't have to go back for a second operation based on the low positive margin rate. You have your own tissue and you recover pretty fast. Once you get back to the workforce, the financial toxicity doesn't take as much of a hit as it would if you had to have a mastectomy and then a tissue expander for implant reconstruction, then a second operation with an implant, then touch-up operations. On average, after a mastectomy with reconstruction, a woman undergoes 3 to 4 operations.
Yeah, that's a big point.
That's a huge point. Some people say, well, we do a mastectomy, put an implant in at the same time, you'll have one operation. But the data doesn't show that.
No, the revision rate is what? About 50%?
50%. That, yeah. And of that 50%, another large percent will have another revision. And that's assuming you don't have complications down the line. If you look at mastectomy and reconstruction, the complication rates are upwards to the point of 30% in a good day, in a good institution.
Now, there are some patients, right, that mastectomy would be the recommended treatment, correct?
Without question. I think in genetics-positive patients, in patients who have inflammatory breast cancer, in patients who have really, really large cancers that you just don't have any breast tissue left behind, those patients definitely, it's a great operation for the right patient.
Yeah.
Because there's no other choice.
Yeah, but keyword being choice, right?
That's exactly
right. You have to
right.
be able to offer choices.
You have to be able to offer a choice. And at the end of the day, if financial toxicity hits everybody, every single breast cancer patient feels it, and they have to be informed of the fact that their choice has a difference between the type of operation they have with regards to the financial toxicity outcome. And so oncoplastics provides less financial toxicity than something like a mastectomy with a reconstruction. And that is just a fact.
One of the other points I wanted to mention when we talk about positive margins is several of the steps that the healthcare system is doing to support our patients is really investing in the care of the patients. So there really is never a question of why, it's when can we do it. So we have a lot of different techniques and technological advancements in the operating room with us to help be successful, right? So we have intraoperative specimen radiograph, where we take a picture, an x-ray, real time while the patient's still asleep, where we can assess, did we get it all? And radiographically, we can tell, was the tumor removed? Did we get the right area? Now, that doesn't tell us the whole picture, right? You have to look under a microscope, but it gives us a good idea that we got the right area, and that's happening real time, which is great. We have newer techniques that uses spectroscopy to assess the edges of the margin to make sure that we've gotten all the cancer at the time, and that's really reduced the risk of us having to go back in a second time.
Yeah, so what you're talking about is something called a margin probe, which is the only FDA-approved technology that looks at margins and decreases margin positivity. And that with oncoplastic surgery, which we're studying right now because we're a research center as well, we're using both techniques, one that's proven by data in oncoplastics and the other technology, which is also proven by data and FDA recognition in decreasing positive margin rates. So we're asking, well, if we use that plus oncoplastics, does our 10% positive margin rate drop to 5%? You know, again, this is just the journey that we're doing to get better every single time. Why stop at 10? Let's get to 5. Why stop at 5?
Let's get to 0. Or never.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think, you know, we don't, just because in the country 20 to 40% positive margin rate is seen as the standard doesn't mean it's the standard for Tufts Medicine.
Great point, right? You say that's an acceptable number. Acceptable to who, right? You're the patient. That's a tough number to have to get to. But if you can reduce it to 10% as oncoplastic surgery does, or with the other techniques, even lower than that, I mean, that is the goal. The goal is to never have cancer, but if you get it, to be with a team that's going to make sure that they take great care of you with all the technological advancements to reduce the chances, positive margins, and all the downstream effects of that.
Yeah, I think if you come and see any breast surgeon in Tufts Medicine, whether it's you, me, you know, our colleagues in Dr. Soon Liu or Dr. Sarah Persing, or even Dr. Lerna Ozcan over in Lowell, I think we've all bought into and have the ability to do oncoplastic surgery. You and I are oncoplastic surgeons. You know, what I would recommend patients do is we live in a city with wonderful hospital and opportunities to get consultations. Always look towards what your surgeon is offering you. But a second opinion is never a bad thing. So one of the things that, you know, I would encourage patients to do is, you know, see what your surgeons offer you, but within the standard of care, at least according to all the guidelines, including now the NCCN guidelines, the word oncoplastic surgery should be brought into the discussion. And if it is not, it would be reasonable to get a second opinion in a system that offers that.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Doctors, this has been amazing. A couple of quick follow-up questions that I have, if that's okay. You're both out there teaching internationally. You're instructing well-established surgeons on these techniques, which is amazing. Back here at Tufts Medicine, you're also teaching medical students and interns and residents. And how exciting is it both for them and for all of us to think about that they're learning these techniques as they're coming up as young surgeons?
Yeah, that's you know, that's the next step that we're going to do. Right now, we train medical students and we have surgical residents, and they've gone on to become breast surgeons who provide oncoplastic techniques. And if they're not, they're general surgeons who at least are aware that this should be an option. We have medical students who are interested then in surgery and hopefully will one day become breast surgeons who become oncoplastic surgeons. But I think the next thing in the effort to continually improve, which is hopefully, which is always our mission, is to provide a oncoplastic breast fellowship. And we have so many cases, so much research, and we've set a precedent of what should be the standard of care that, you know, especially with the collaboration between Melrose and Tufts Medical Center and Tufts Medicine in general being a large health system with the number of cases that we do and the experience that we've had, the next step is providing an oncoplastic fellowship to train established surgeons the next level of oncoplastic surgery, which are the advanced techniques that we are now offering in Tufts Medicine.
Yeah, it gives us personal and professional fulfillment, gratification to be able to hand down the techniques that we've taught to expand it across the nation. I mean, that's the goal of a, in my mind, a good surgeon is those who can teach others to do it. And if we are only doing it for ourselves within a small institution and not expanding the knowledge in a national level, what difference are we making long term? If we're not publishing our outcomes, what difference are we making?
Yeah,
you know, this is not just a Tufts Medicine issue. This is an international issue with breast cancer, fighting this disease. And it's great to be at the top and teaching everyone around us, but we want to rise up together. So when we have the opportunity of teaching medical students and physician assistant students and interns and residents, it's such a privilege. It's such a pleasure. It's so exciting. Because everybody's enthusiastic. Everybody wants the patient to do well. Everybody wants to learn new techniques and to, because they see the advantage of it.
Yeah, this is not something that we should keep in Tufts Medicine. I think that was true 6 years ago when we started our efforts in educating, and it's expanded exponentially to the point where we see, you know, places that never had the word oncoplastic surgery, you know, describe themselves as centers of oncoplastic surgery. And I named a few institutions throughout the country before. And they were, you know, it's nice to see there's more literature based on this when we go to meetings. It's certainly the hot topic, especially with the newer techniques. A lot of this has to do with efforts, not just by me and Sam, but by other colleagues in our societies and in the global realm. You know, what we have seen is the United States, which didn't have a lot of influence in oncoplastic surgery, has now joined the table of other European nations that developed it. And we're being taken seriously because we are teaching it, we're studying it, and we're advancing it. So, yes, I think the footprint now has not only become regional to national, but it's become international. And it's all being done fundamentally so that the breast cancer patient has a choice in a very, very good surgical option.
Great. And one last thing before we leave, I think it's always important to mention the importance of early detection. So if either or both of you would like to give a plug.
That is one of my passions is we've talked a lot about detection and treatment, but prevention, I think, should be on everybody's mind. And if we can prevent this disease, that's the ultimate goal here. So it's one thing to have to undergo surgery, but our goal is to prevent it in the first place. And one of the best ways to do that is healthy diet, regular exercise, limiting or omitting alcohol. And those have been shown again and again to reduce one's risk for developing breast cancer. But we strongly recommend, and this is based on many guidelines, that women undergo yearly mammograms. At Tufts Medicine, we offer 3D mammograms, otherwise known as tomosynthesis. And that should begin at the age of 40. And a lot of questions we get are, well, I've read 50 and you know 60, and when do I stop? So if you base it on most guidelines, it's starting at age 40, doing it annually until you're well into your 70s and 80s. You know, when you don't think you'd do anything about a positive mammogram, that's about the time I would tell somebody to stop. In other patients who have a family history, who have dense tissue, who have a genetic abnormality that places them at a high risk of developing breast cancer.
Like a BRCA mutation?
Yep, like a BRCA mutation or others. Annual mammograms starting younger than that is recommended. So my recommendation to all patients is one, live an active, healthy lifestyle. Number two, talk with your doctor about your family history. Talk to your doctor about when it's okay to start screening. Do your self-exams. If you feel something, say something. Bring it up to your doctor. Let them know you feel something, and they will refer you to the breast specialist for additional tests if warranted. But anybody who's got a strong family history with dense tissue should be talking to their doctor about a risk assessment. We can get you plugged in for yearly 3D mammograms, yearly MRIs if indicated, and follow you very closely so that if something is detected, it's detected early because, as we know, early detection saves lives.
Couldn't agree more with everything you said, but I want to underscore the fact that those patients who do not have increased risk factors, to underscore Dr. Nardello, to Sam's point, multiple societies have recommended age 40 as the first screening mammogram with an annual clinical exam with their doctor. Do not skip on that. One of the reasons why I believe the mortality rate of breast cancer has dropped is because we have done a better job with mammograms, and our societies have come together in recommending this guideline and when to start and for which patients. But in general, those who do not have higher risk factors, 40 with yearly clinical exams with their doctor for the mammogram.
Great. Thank you to today's guests, Dr. Salvatore Nardello, known as Sam, and Dr. Abhishek Chatterjee, known as Sonny.
Yep.
Oncoplastic breast surgeons at Tufts Medicine, Melrose Wakefield Hospital. If you enjoyed this podcast, have feedback for us, or want to suggest future topics, please drop us a note at community@melrosewakefield.org. The Healthy Podcast is co-produced by Melrose Wakefield Hospital and Wakefield Community Access Television. For more information, listings of community events and lectures, or to find a doctor, visit melrosewakefield.org. All content heard on the Healthy Podcast was created for informational purposes only. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or qualified provider with any questions regarding a medical condition.